Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Welcome to Capital Irish. Andy Linton here, and I'm glad you've joined us for our programme. Thanks to our sponsors for making it all possible. And I've got, as we did last time, I've got Eilish Cassidy in the control room controlling things, thanks to her as well. So in the last programme, I talked about the British and Irish Film Festival, which was just finished, I think, this week, or is just about to finish. And I mentioned three films that had an Irish connection. In the end, I only got to see one of the ones I talked about. And the one I did get to see was the one called Dance First, which had Gabriel Byrne and Finn O'Shea playing Samuel Beckett, and cast of other people, of course. The title comes from the Beckett quote, which I really like, is Dance First, Think Later. It's the natural order. And I think sometimes we do it the other way around and we sort of spend too much time thinking and analysing things and not getting on with having fun. I really enjoyed it. To be honest, I didn't know a lot about Beckett. I knew his name, of course, and the play Waiting for Godot. But the film uses the device of a set of dialogues between Beckett and himself, which sort of echoes the play where the two characters have conversations about not very much and stuff. Then they spun off into various episodes from Beckett's life, his childhood, and then when he moved to Paris and bits and pieces. And I suppose the main episodes that stood out were the ones which were his relationship with James Joyce and also Joyce's daughter, Amelia. And she was sort of a sad character. She ended up hospitalised with schizophrenia and spent a large portion of her adult life locked away in institutions. And at some one point she'd decided she was going to marry Beckett, but Beckett was having none of it and ran away. And then the other bit I had no idea about, of course, was that because he lived in France before the Second World War, when the war broke out, he was still there and he ended up working in the French Resistance and was given, French medals for being in the Resistance and so on. And he later described it as just some Boy Scout activities, but I suspect it might have been a bit more than that. And then the other part of the thing was he married a French woman or lived with a French woman for a long time, then married her later. And he had that long relationship with her, but also with a long-term mistress called Barbara Bray, she moved to Paris and they lived close to each other. And I don't think Suzanne, his wife, was desperately happy about it all, but she sort of lived with it. And so life went on like that. Anyway, the biopic, because it's, has a bit of poetic license, doesn't actually stick to all the facts and so on, but that doesn't make it any less worth watching. But the thing I think it did was prompt me to, have a look and see, well, who was this guy Beckett? He went to school in Enniskillen at Patora Grammar School. He had a bunch of things like that you didn't know about. But the ones I sort of picked out were the Irish Navy has some fishery protection vessels, and they're all, the four of them are in the Samuel Beckett class of ships. One of them's called Samuel Beckett, one's called James Joyce, one's called William Butler Yeats. You can see a theme here. And the last one is George Bernard Shaw. And three of those names are Irish Nobel Prize winners for literature. Joyce was the one who missed out. And of course, the other Irish Nobel laureate for literature was Seamus Heaney. But, he's a Nordy, so they're not going to name a ship after him maybe yet, And he also had the strange distinction of, he was quite a good cricket player, and he actually played first-class county cricket in England for Northampton. And so there's a thing called Wisden, which is the sort of cricket Bible, all the statistics about cricket. And I was digging, and I saw the claim that Beckett's the only Nobel Prize winner who played first-class cricket and is mentioned in Wisden. So that may not be right, but I just like the notion of it, you know. And he also worked on with Joyce before the Second World War on Finnegan's Wake. He did some of the research for Joyce, and Joyce's eyesight was starting to go at this point. And so Beckett was the scribe who wrote down some of it. And maybe Joyce wanted him to spell it correctly, and he spelled it the way it was. I don't know, you know, but there you go. So I often wonder, there's an awful lot of people who started reading Finnegan's Wake, but I don't know whether a number of people haven't finished it, and I think I include myself in that. I know I started it at one point when I was younger, but I don't actually ever remember finishing it. Anyway, Finnegan's Wake is also the name of an old sort of Irish-American broadsheet song, whatever you want to call it, named Finnegan's Wake. And purportedly, Joyce took the name for the book from, and the story from the song. And I found a nice recording. It's taken from a TV program with the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makem of Finnegan's Wake. And there's a bit of both in here. So if you bear with Tommy Makem as he starts to read you all of Finnegan's Wake, I promise you he doesn't read it all.
That's probably whiskey. Well, it might be champagne, you never know. Do you know that the word whiskey comes from the old Gaelic Ishka Baha, which means the water of life?
Isn't that lovely?
Well, there was a builder's labourer in Dublin who was very fond of that same Ishka Baha. And one morning after the night before, he was up on a ladder, and he got dizzy, and he fell and broke his skull. And they carried him home and they had a wake for him. And at this wake, there was music, dancing, drinking, fighting, everything you should have at a good wake.
What about the lovemaker?
Well, that was it. Well, there was a song, a Dublin street ballad about this wake. And there was also a novel by James Joyce, that famous Irish author James Joyce, who wrote a very complicated, involved novel based on the street ballad. And he gave it the same title, Finnegan's Wake. Now, we're going to sing the ballad, but first, by way of introduction and explanation, Tom is going to read for us the entire novel by James Joyce, Finnegan's Wake.
Goodbye, Tom.
Goodbye.
Big Mr. Finnegan of the Stuttering Hand, free man's maurer, lived in the broadest way imaginable in his rushly, too far back for Mesuagians, before Joshua and Judges had given us numbers or Helvidicus had committed Deuteronomy.
Come on, Tom. Come on.
Now, during mighty odd years, this man of hard cement and edifices in Topperstop piled bildung supra bildung on the banks of the livers for the so-and-so.
Here, here.
A Woolworth of a skyscraper, entirely originating from next to nothing, with a burning bush above of its bobble top, and with Lardons O'Toole's as trittering up and Thomas O'Bucket's tottering down. Now the first was he to bear arms and a name, Wassily Boozily of Resengabum. Ho, Mr. Finn, you're going to be fined again. Ha, Mr. Fun, you're going to be Mr. Finn again.
Oh.
But Dim, he stuttered from the ladder. Damn, he was dumb.
Tim Finnegan lived in Walking Street, a gentle Irishman, mighty odd. He had a brogue, both rich and sweet, and to rise in the world he carried a hod. You see, the sort of a tippler's way, with a love for the liquor, Tim was born. To help him on with his work each day, he'd a drop at the crater every morn.
And back for the dad, or dance to your partner, when the power your trotter shake. What a day, the truth they told you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
One morning Tim felt rather full. His head felt heavy, which made him shake. He fell off the ladder and he broke his skull. They carried him home, his corpse to wake. They rolled him up in a nice clean sheet, laid him out upon the bed, with a gallon of whiskey at his feet and a barrel of porter at his head.
And back with the dad of death to your partner with the warrior trotter shake. Was it they told you lots of bother Finnegan's wake?
His friends assembled at the wake and Mrs. Finnegan called for lunch. First they brought in tea and cake, then pipes, tobacco and whiskey punch. Biddy O'Brien began to cry. Such a nice clean corpse did you ever see? At a Tim of Bourneen, why did you die? And I shut your mouth, says Biddy McGee.
Well, the dad of death's dear partner went to glory and drum and shake. Was it the truth I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's wake?
Then Maggie O'Connor took up the job. Oh, Biddy, says she, you're wrong, I'm sure. Biddy gave her a belt and the gob, and she left her sprawling on the floor.
Then the law did soon engage, as woman to woman and man to man. Shillelagh law was all the rage, and a row and eruption soon began. Back to the man of death to your partner with the bow, your partner shake. Wasn't it? They told you lots of fun at Finnegan's wake.
Then Mickey O'Connor ducked his head when a bucket of whiskey flew at him. It missed and fallen on the bed, the liquor scatters over Tim.
Be God, he revives. See how he rises. Timothy rising from the bed, saying, whirl your whiskey around like blazes. Thunder and lightning, do you think I'm dead?
What for the dad who danced to your partner with the power you put in shame? What a day they told you lots of fun and put against the way.
So there we are, the Clancy Brothers and Tommy Makin with Finnegan's Wake. Those guys were really sort of instrumental or in me getting interested in sort of Irish music and stuff back in the 60s, I suppose, when I was a young pup. So it's always sort of fun to hear them again. The last time I was on, I mentioned about being at college in Newcastle on Tyne, where I met Liam Neeson before he was famous. And I'm going to talk about one of the other people I met there who wanted to be famous, but probably didn't become famous anyway. So when I was there, I shared a flat with some guys, and I've kept in touch with a couple of them. And I often see them when I'm back in the UK. And but there was one of the lads I lost touch with, a guy called Johnny Hilly, who was from just south of Glasgow in Scotland. I stayed with him the night before my sister's wedding in 1984, down in just north of London. And that was the last time I saw him. So that's, coming up for now for 40 years ago. I moved to New Zealand in 1989 and that didn't help. Johnny was a keen musician, played the guitar and the piano, wrote songs and performed them in the college folk club and sort of elsewhere. And I sort of always had the impression that he went to college to have a backstop in case the music thing didn't quite pan out. Now, by losing touch, of course, remember back then there was no social media and email certainly wasn't widely available until the late 1990s. So over the years, my wife Sheila and I have made attempts to track him down online, scoured Facebook, looked for did he ever make a record and get on YouTube or anything like that, and no avail. So we still keep in contact with a woman who came from the same town as Johnny did in Scotland, and she was at college with us as well. And asked her, had she heard anything about him? No, she'd heard nothing about him. And to be honest, I thought, I just had the feeling he was dead, something had happened to him, and I just lost track completely. Anyway, last week, this woman, Katerina, who knew him, spotted a couple of photos that he'd posted in a Facebook group of me and him and Sheila and the dog I had when I was at college called Grimsby and the guy from Hong Kong who shared a flat as well with us at various points. And Johnny had posted pictures, and he said, weren't we the coolest bunch? You know, we were the only flat in college to have a dog and a Chinese houseboy. I don't think that was very politically correct, but anyway. So we've managed to get in touch, and we're still swapping stories and photos. Turns out he lives in St Albans in north of London, and we were there last year and maybe walked past him in the street or drove down the street that he lives in. I have no idea. And we could have caught up. So maybe next time I'm there, I'll have a beer with him and, you know, chew the fat. Anyway, he did take a stab at the music thing, and he got a recording deal. He made a couple of albums. But it's a brutal business, and not everyone gets the breaks that make the difference. He sent me some tracks, and here's one of them. He said he woke up one morning and decided he was going to write a Beatles song. And I think you can sort of hear the style thing here. It's a song called Please Don't Think It's Easy. And this is Johnny Hilly. So, Johnny Hilly with Please Don't Think It's Easy. I'm looking forward to sort of having some more email back and forwards with him and keeping in touch. And if I find out anything more about anything interesting at that track, down that track, I'll let you know. In our last programme, it was 2 or 3 days before that rugby match, the one that broke so many hearts in Ireland when they faced the All Blacks in the quarterfinals or whatever of the World Cup, and the All Blacks managed to pip them at the post, keep them out, do the better job, whatever way you want to put it, you know. And it broke lots of hearts, and I thought when I was going to watch the match, I was thinking, oh good, you know, this is now a chance for Ireland to beat them and get through to the next round. And while I was watching the game, I found something very strange going on. And I'm not sure I should confess to this, but I actually wanted New Zealand to win. I found myself thinking about afterwards, not in any sort of deep way, but, you know, there was stuff going on there, and I thought, well, I know who these players are. I knew who they were better than I knew who the Irish players were, because they're in the press here. I think it's sort of found myself thinking about it over the last couple of weeks, and the idea of where we belong, you know, it's always a thing for us people who've moved away from home to somewhere else, and we've made a home somewhere else, and the word home is overlaid with all sorts of meanings and stuff. You know, I've lived here for 34 years. I left Ireland when I was 23. I had 15 years in the north of England and before I came here. And I remember back in the 1980s, living in the north of England, to making a very conscious decision to say, you know, to see myself as an Irishman, to have an Irish passport, not to have a British passport. When people asked me where I was from, I wouldn't qualify and say Northern Ireland or the North. I would say I'm from Ireland, you know. And it's part of who I am, for sure. And if you ask me here, what are you? I'd say, well, look, I'm Irish, but I live in New Zealand, and I happen to have New Zealand citizenship. And I've talked to other Irish people who sort of see themselves that way. But it just made me think about why that's like this. Did having a grandson born here in New Zealand this year change things? How long do we migrants take to put down roots? I think for first generation people, it's probably never a complete thing. Part of you says home is here. Part of you says home is back in Ireland or wherever you come from. Anyway, here's a song that talks about this. It's a song called I Pity the Poor Immigrant by Bob Dylan. And we'll just hear that, and then we maybe have a few seconds at the end just to tidy up.
Pity the poor immigrant who wishes he would have stayed home, who uses all his power to do evil, but in the end is always left so alone. That man who fingers cheats and whom lies with every breath, who passionately hates his life and likewise fears his death. Whose strength is spent in vain, whose heaven is like iron sides, whose tears are like rain, who eats but is not satisfied, hears but does not see, who falls in love with wealth itself and turns his back on me. Town with blood. like the glass. I pity the poor immigrant when his gladness comes to pass.
So Bob Dylan with I Pity the Poor Immigrant. So our time's nearly up. And so once again, thanks to our sponsors and the Eilish for recording the show. I'll see you next time. Now here's a tune to take us out. It's Ballyscully, recorded live at Molly Malone's back in 2008.
Been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.